Hello and welcome to the Fishing Guide Podcast. I'm your host, Brad Weekman, in the house, and she was just on recently. She came back for another show because we wanted to talk about, especially about war eagle and also about habitat on Beaver Lake. So this is Becky Roark, and she's with Beaver Lake Watershed Alliance. And tell us, we're fishermen watching the show, and some of us are here that fish Beaver Lake, but basically all reservoirs kind of have habitat, but what are you doing? Why are you working with the game and fish?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thanks for having me, Brad, on today's show. We've got a lot of initiatives going on, and one of them is working with game and fish to focus on restoring and increasing habitat in Beaver Lake. John Stein, if you talk to him, uh-huh. He'll tell you know, lakes get old.
Right.
And there's loss of habitat is a big issue. So we're working with them to do this. And people might wonder, well, you know, you're a watershed group. Where's the connection there?
Right.
So I just thought I'd come in and explain a little bit about that.
Tell us how you end up collaborating with the Arkansas Game and Fish on this project.
Yeah. So a lot of the areas around Beaver Lake are, you know, steep slopes.
Right.
You look out there and you see trees and shrubs and it's real densely forested. However, a lot of those shorelines used to be, or they are, they're glade habitats. So,
which means?
Well, glade is like, if you have really thin soils over cherty stone or limestone or dolomite or sandstone,
right,
with just a thin layer of soil, and you see kind of more desert-like landscape,
right.
those are glades, and we have over 10,000 of them around Beaver Lake.
Wow.
Yeah, and they're the ones that are intact are really pristine and high-quality landscapes for filtering out sediment and nutrients going into the lake, huge biodiversity hotspot for like the blue-collared lizard. I don't know if you've seen anything about that, but
no, I haven't.
They're trying to bring back habitat for this blue-collared lizard, and it's pretty cool looking. It looks like you would see it in the Amazon somewhere, but they call it the mountain boomer.
Oh,
yeah. So,
So you come in, you get on the boats and help drop some of the wood?
Yeah, I have, actually. So these glades.
Well, there's a couple places I'd like you to put them the next time you go out. When John says, is there any place particular? Well, Brad said he wants some right over there by his house.
That's a good word. But yeah, so these glades have been overgrown by cedar trees.
Right.
And so cedar trees make really good fish habitat, though.
Right.
So that's why it was like a really great partnership to restore an important landscape around the lake while also benefiting fisheries with the cedar tree habitats. So,
because you were able to remove some of the cedars with permission from the Corps of Engineers.
Yes.
And put them in the lake.
Correct. Yeah. Uh-huh. Corps of Engineers. We worked specifically on the wildlife management area over near Van Hollow areas where a lot of clearing happened. Hobbs State Park also assisted too, and lots of volunteers.
Right.
The backcountry hunters and anglers, hook, line, and sinker. You know, a lot of people came out and volunteered to help do this. So, I wish I knew exactly how many. There was hundreds of these structures that were placed all over the lake. But what's cool is you can go on Game and Fish's website, and they have these all mapped out. So on a you could upload that to your fish finder, which I did.
There you go.
And so now I just put it on my little fish finder, and it pops up, and it just shows you all the X's, and those are where the habitats are.
Right.
I went over to Montanay recently and went right over the habitats and caught crappie and less than 30 minutes. So they work.
We love people that work in the outdoors that go fishing. People that work and then they go fishing. It's, you know, like sometimes you get people that are, that talk about the environment, but they don't go out in the environment.
So, I work to support my fishing hobby.
Well, then that takes us to the question. Would you rather catch a big old bass or would you rather catch a crappie?
Ooh. I like smallmouth.
Oh, my. You.
They are fighter. They just feel like you have a 20-pound fish on there. But my best smallmouth was in Beaver Lake.
Wow. So talking about that and talking about Wargle, Wargle used to be a lot clearer. You know, at least I feel that way. Is that correct? It feels like there's more, you know, sedimentation and the water clarity, just the turbidity level so high. Mm-hmm. How do you know how it's changed? Do you have gauges? Is that how you do it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. There's a couple of USGS gauges up and down War Eagle.
Uh-huh.
Like if you're looking to a float over on near Withrow, they have a gauge there that you can look at. It says Hinesville when you go online and look for it.
Is that under the USGS website?
Yes.
You know that address by chance?
I don't know.
I know it's those letters.
I'll tell you what. If you Google USGS Stream Gauge War Eagle, it'll pop right up.
All right.
So
you look at that, and that's how you're getting some of your data. That's where you're getting that from.
Yeah. And we hire people to do big studies and stuff. And so we hired people to do a study on the entire watershed.
Wow.
And
which is how many square miles?
1,200 square miles, 766,000 acres.
Wow.
It's a huge area. Yeah.
But so you hire them to come and do some studies then.
Yeah. Yep. They come in and they study, where do we need it? Where is the sediment an issue? Where is phosphorus and nitrogen? Identifying those as some of the main threats to the lake and to our waterways. And what are some best management practices that are recommended to kind of correct and restore the issues throughout the watershed? So
give us some examples of some projects that you've done. You did one down in Elkins, right? Did you do a stream restoration down there?
We recently did a little it's a micro prairie, is what we call it. It's behind the community center.
Yeah.
That was just a lawn area, and we worked with the city to convert that into a micro prairie because it was historically a prairie. So
just
kind of putting that back to the way it was. And plus the community has been really excited about it too. So,
and you brought in didn't you bring in some rocks and things like that too? Or was it natural rock that was there? Maybe got moved a little bit.
Seemed not like in the there prairie. Was we didn't do any rocks there.
Right.
But we are doing some major restoration work like that on the War Eagle.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
And where's that? So, like, give us an idea. So you're doing it on private property?
Yeah.
Or how's that?
Yes. So we have two initiatives for War Eagle right now. One of them is called a RCPP for short.
It's okay.
A Regional Conservation Partnership Program.
All right.
And it's more focused on working with producers, farmers, forested landowners, and getting conservation practices that benefit their farm and their forests, but also benefit water quality too. So that's about $5 million over 5 years. We're in year two, almost year three of this project.
Wow.
We've spent over $1 million, or landowners have received over $1.4 million so far. And the big thing there too is if you're interested in building a pond or wanting to do prescribed fire, habitat for turkey or deer, all those things can be met through this program. And then we have another,
was thinking, wow, that's a big project.
It is.
Right. Yeah.
And then, second, and that's with the USDA Natural Resource Conservation Service. And we have about 15 partners working together.
Wow.
And there's going to be a really big stream restoration project on War Eagle out of that. So,
is that the Garhole area?
Yes.
Yeah. And so they actually, dams, you always hear about dams. You hear about states or places that are removing dams. Mm-hmm. And that happened here too, right?
Yeah.
And so how do you go about removing a dam? Hard enough building one, but removing would be harder yet. What do you do with the products, the byproduct of removing a low water dam? Mm-hmm.
Well, you might have seen in our news back about a year ago this month, we went into the Warrigal and we saw the it was actually with Daryl Bowman with Game and Fish Commission. Right. Him and I talked about this dam on Warrigal, and it was the old drinking water supply for the city of Huntsville.
Right.
So back in the 60s, they had built this dam and put it into a water reservoir, and then it gravity fed to the city. So when Beaver Lake came along, though, and they no longer needed that,
right?
They switched over to Madison County. And so this dam sat there and just kind of started degrading over time.
Uh-huh.
And then you kind of saw these groups like American Rivers and the Southeast Aquatic Resource Partnership popping up, talking about the benefits of dam removal. So that kind of brought us to attention to, there are some dams on the Warrigal that could probably benefit from removal and or replacement of a different type of, bridge, right, or thing. So so the Warrigal, the Huntsville, old city of Huntsville drinking water dam was the first one to come out. And right. We didn't do that. We actually worked with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Fish Passage crew.
Wow.
They came in. They brought a Trip Bolton. They brought in a crew from Georgia and all over. It was like four or five guys, and they just worked on notching it out slowly. And, they're very methodical and very uh-huh. conservation-minded group, just kind of a little bit at a time. And it was 180-foot dam. This yeah. is a big dam that was on Warrigal. So took them a few weeks, and a lot of that rubble kind of was staged, set aside. And
uh-huh.
I think we're going to reuse it in some restoration
Yeah.
Projects down the road. But another thing that was really cool, though, was before that dam came out, we did a mussel rodeo,
uh-huh.
the Game and Fish.
Right.
And we went in and collected all the mussels. I saw some mussel shells you had outside.
Yes.
So same ones.
Right.
We took out over 3,000 of those right around that area.
Uh-huh.
So those are going to go safe to a safe place and be propagated. And then once all this construction work is done, we're going to reintroduce those mussels back in. So,
is that a sign of a good, clean water source?
It is.
Uh huh.
Yeah, mussels are mussels, and a lot of your macroinvertebrates, darters, right. smaller species. Definitely, when you see those, you have good water quality.
Mm-hmm. So, you have any other initiatives that you're Yeah. sliding through that Oh. you're working on?
Well, to continue on that dam removal. So there's Uh-huh. actually four dams on
Oh, right.
Or barriers on the Warrigal Uh-huh. we're gonna do. So Game and Fish applied for America the Beautiful project, and we were awarded with them. That's over $5 million
Wow.
to do this work. So the Huntsville Dam was part of that, and there'll be some restoration work. And then downstream, we have the Garhole,
yep.
so that low water crossings
yep.
going to come out. We're going to put in a span bridge. And then there's two other smaller barriers around the Huntsville, the dam we just did. So we're not going to do the mill. Everybody asks us.
I was just going to ask you about the mill.
No, we're not taking right. out the mill. That's a whole different project or conversation. But but all of this is going to reconnect over 400 miles of creeks and streams. It's going to improve fisheries. Right. It's going to improve water quality. It's going to help out farmers. So, they're losing a lot of land. So
right.
this restoration work is going to help help them out too. So,
you guys do a lot of work with farmers, right, with the private landowners. Mm-hmm. So, Warrigal's different than, say, the White River by Goshen, where it's home, 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 home.
Yeah.
And their property is lawns and that are mowed and stuff like that. What's the difference between, say, in a natural environment compared to the home after home subdivisions that are on there that How does that affect the lake? And that goes with any place, like wherever people are building.
Yeah.
How does that change? It's not good, is it, for the environment itself, for the river?
Well, I mean, I just go back to history.
Right.
Like, what did it look like here? And if you go back and look at the GLO, you know, when Lewis and Clark came, it was a lot of glades. It was a lot of, you know, the forest. You could ride a carriage through the forest. Like, that's
really
how sparse our forested areas were. There were prairies, you know, all this great landscape that was all doing this work to soak in rainwater, soak it into the ground, replenish groundwater, keep our water table stable. You know, and the lake wasn't there back then, but the White River, you know, keeping it healthy. And there was a connection between the rivers and the floodplains. But we started, you know, building cities and towns, and most of our cities and towns are around creeks and streams.
Right.
Some of it for industry reasons or some of it for survival reasons. But those cities started growing, and as those started growing, you know, there was less and less places for water to soak into the ground and to do what natural hydrology does. So now we kind of look at, okay, now what do we do? And I always just tell people, you know, any little bit helps. So if you can do, you know, a planting strip of natives, or let some grass grow a little bit more here next to your ditch, or capture the water off of your roof.
Yeah.
A lot of people do the rain barrels and stuff. You know, turning your driveways into the pervious pavers, like things that let the water soak through. And then if you have a large piece of property, you know, having a, you know, we'll come out and help you do a management plan and look at, you know, if you have forested area, pasture area, how do those work together and what can you do? We can come out and do some assessments and help give some recommendations for that. So no matter where you are, if you're a farmer, if you just have a house in town, there's always something you can do to help keep the water on your property, let it soak in slowly, keep it from running off so quickly, which ultimately helps protect Beaver Lake.
There you go. Well, that takes us to Tackle Time. Tackle Time, sponsored by Pico Lures. They have a complete line of hard and soft baits. You can check them out at picolures.com. Of course, the clearer our water is, the more you're going to use, you know, subtle colors to catch those smallmouth. And the dirtier the water is, if there's a high turbidity level on this lake, like right now, you pull out that red crawl, and that's what you throw in this dirty water, and they'll eat it up. So check them out at picolures.com. If they want to become involved or find out more how they can help the environment, help the lake and the Alliance, where would they go?
Yeah, so they can come to our website, beaverwatershedalliance.org, or sign up for our newsletter, which is on our website. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and just, anyway, there's lots of ways to connect with us, and we'll help however we can.
There you go. There you have it. Like I always like to end the show, make sure you keep your hook sharp and your lures in the water.